First, I just want to thank Yosef for everything he contributed this year. And I wanted to start with just the basic question of what do we know about the month of Shvat? The first thing that comes to mind, obviously, is Tu B'Shvat, right? So is there anything else there is to say about Shvat besides for Tu B'Shvat? And the answer actually is yes. And interestingly, there's actually a pasuk in Chumash that mentions Rosh Chodesh Shvat, and there are not so many dates mentioned in Chumash. So in the first source I have from Dvarim, Perak Aleph, Pasuk Gimel, it says, "Vayhi b'arba'im shana, v'ashteh asar chodesh, v'achal b'chodesh, diber Moshe al b'nei Yisrael, k'chol asher tziva Hashem oto aleihem," that it was at the end of the 40th year, at the end of the Midbar, and this is the very beginning of Sefer Dvarim, where it's on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. It says, "Ashteh asar chodesh," the Torah counts months from Nisan, so that means the 12th month would be right before Nisan Adar, and the 11th month is Shvat, and it was v'achal b'chodesh, Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Moshe starts talking to B'nai Yisrael and starts giving over the contents of Sefer Dvarim. Very interesting. Anything else you know about Shvat? So there's a context that we can place the month of Shvat, which is a context that exists for every month, actually, on the Jewish calendar. And it's something that sort of exists in the secular world also. It's Lahavdil, but it is kind of comparable, which is the zodiac. That there's this idea of zodiacs, not the made-up horoscopes in the newspaper that don't mean anything, but there is an idea of mazalos in the Jewish year, and that every Jewish month, Hebrew month, has a constellation or an idea, concept of mazel associated with it, some kind of power that sort of rules over that month. And there's a picture, like an image, that's associated with that mazel, and it's also parallel to a shevet. So this is true for every one of the 12 months, and it's true for Shvat also in particular. And the mazel of Shvat is the dli, is the bucket, like a pail of water. And the B'nai Safkar quotes Rav Yosef Jigatila, who says that the order, in order to figure out what Shevet is parallel to the Mazalos, you go according to the order in which B'nai Israel camped in the Midbar. So like they camped, some people say it was in a square, some people say it was on a line, but whatever the case was, it went Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, and there's a specific order in which all the Shvatim camped. Like Yehuda was the first one to move when they traveled, and everyone followed. The 11th Shevet, which is, you know, parallel to the 11th month of Shvat, was Asher. And so B'nai Yisachar quotes that Asher is the Shevet that's associated with Shvat and with this mazel of Dali. The Dali was the mazel of Asher. And actually, he says, it's actually considered the mazel of all the Jewish people, of Yisrael as a whole as well, which we're going to see in a minute. And he explains this more. He quotes a couple of examples, which are in the next few sources, where we see that a concept of a dli, like a water pail, is a symbol specifically for all of Yisrael, because there's something else associated with a water pail. He points out water, we know the Gemara in Bava Kama says, "Ein mayim ela Torah." Water is a famous symbol for Torah. So there's something connected between the pail and water and Torah. And that's why it's a symbol for all of the Jewish people, and it's also specifically for Asher and for Shvat. So first he quotes in Maseches Yuma, in Daf Chachet Amud Bet, he says, it says, "Eliezer Eved Avram Zakein V'Yoshev V'Yeshiva Hayah Shemar V'Yomer Avram El Avdo Zakein Beito HaMoshel B'Chol Asher Lo Amar Av Eliezer Shemoshel B'Torah Rabo Hu Damesek Eliezer Amar Av Eliezer Tadele U'Mashkemi Torah Tosh L'Rabo L'Acherim." So the Gemara says that Eliezer, the servant of Avram, himself was a wise elder, someone who sat in Yeshiva, and we see this, the Pasuk says that Avram spoke to his servant who was a Zakein. Zakein is a term of like a wise elder. And he was a Moshel B'chol Asher Lo. He was in charge of and the master over what Avram owned. What did Avram own that Eliezer was master over? Moshel B'Torah Rabbo. He was a master of the Torah that Avram was trying to teach to the world. That Eliezer himself was very knowledgeable in Torah. And there's an interesting wordplay that the Gemara makes. It says, the Pasuk calls him Damesek Eliezer. What is Damesek Eliezer? Damesek, if you take the Dalad, and then Eliezer is similar to, you can kind of make the word Dli, or Dole, from putting those letters together, it's a Dole, and Mashke is like from the word Damesek, also has the same root. And so Dole or Mashke means that he kind of drew, the same way you draw water and water people with water, he drew out the waters of Torah and spread it to other people, just like Avram Avinu did. So that's one place we see the symbol of the water pail associated with Torah. Again, with Eliezer, when he went to find a wife for Yitzchak to continue this tradition of spreading the waters of Torah, you know, who's going to be the mother of the continuation of the Jewish people? So he went to find Rivka, and what happened? he goes to Davin Hashem to give him a sign who's the right woman to pick who's going to be right for Yitzchak. And he says, "Vanara asher omar leha hatina kadech beshe v'amra shteg v'gam gmalach ashteke ota hochakel avdachal liyitzchak uva idak yasita chaseri madani." So he says, Hashem, he says, the woman who is the right one, who's for Yitzchak, she should be the one, show me, Hashem, a sign that she'll offer me to drink and my camels to drink. And it's, again, it's at the well with, it doesn't use the word here, but, you know, with her jug, she should give to drink also from a well, which is a similar idea. That means she's ra'oi to be part of the family who's spreading the waters of Torah. And the same image and symbol is used by Moshe as well in Shmos, Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Tet, in source 4. It says, when Moshe goes to Midian, and the daughters of Yisro, right, are at the well, so what happens? They come back to Yisro, and they say to him, "Matamarna ish misri hasilani, hasilanu miyad haroim, v'gam zalo zalalanu, v'yashka datzon." They say, "There's an ish misri who saved us from the roim, and what did he do?" Dalo dalalanu, that he like drew up water for us in order to give to the sheep to drink. So it's the same lashon of drawing up, like the dali, that the water represents Torah. And the Bnei Yisrael points out that Yisro apparently knew all the astrology, and he knew all the Bodhisattvas out there, all the zodiacs, and among them he realized that this symbol of the dali also represents the whole of Yisrael, of the Jewish people. And so when his daughters mentioned that he was involved, that Moshe was involved in this, he realized that this man, this quote-unquote Ish Mitzri, also had ties to Torah and something in that world, and bring him to the house. Like, this is a special person. This is something important to connect us ourselves to. That by that point, even early on, Yisrael wanted to be connected to Yisrael.
So you're saying that the reason that Yisro was that Yisro already wanted to be part of Klal Yisrael even before he met Moshe.
Apparently, that sounds like. It was a little too long to put in the source sheet, but that does sound like what he says. Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is, he doesn't really go into that more, but it's an interesting thought. He knew that later on he would want to. Maybe there was something deep inside him that, like a little spark already, that early on he realized there was something, I don't know. I mean, and Tzipora did end up marrying him, so apparently he did want to be connected to Moshe, and he got to know Moshe, presumably, so, interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we see that the dali and the water in particular symbolize the Torah, and we'll see more about the connections to Asher and everything. So that means that Shemot has a connection to Torah in particular. And there's a book called Rafka Tzvi, by Tzvi Reisman. I'm going to actually mention him, even talk about him more later. But in his book, he quotes the Chidush HaRim, source 5, where he says that exactly that idea, that there's a connection and a strong power for Torah in the month of Shvat. He says, the Chidush HaRim says, "Niftachim bayom zeh mayanot shel be'er ha-Torah, v'az mitorer ha-sagat ha-Torah shebal peh, v'efshar lahakir chidushei Torah shel kodem echa b'shvat u'la'achar echa b'shvat." And it continues, "Okafish amru chasidim b'shmo, b'chodesh hazeh magishim min hashamayim chidushei Torah min masha adam yichadesh b'chol yimur hashana." So there's a koach for chidushei Torah in Shvat. He says the waters of Torah are like opened up and awakened, and specifically Torah Shvat Peh. He explains that just like going back to the first source, you know, what's the connection between the image of the Dali and the first source of Moshe telling over a Sefer Dvarim in Shvat. So he says, what is Moshe doing by telling over Sefer Dvarim? He's telling over Torah. And essentially, he's the first human being to give over Torah, sort of on his own accord, which is a little different than like Mamre Har Sinai. And so he associates that with Torah Shebal Peh specifically. And so there's a special like awakening of being able to grasp Torah Shebal Peh in Shvat. And also a person can recognize Chidushei Torah more easily. And specifically that the Chidushei Torah for the whole year are kind of more accessible. They come to us. It's like sort of when they come down on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. That's like when the opening starts. I'm not sure exactly if he means that maybe that's decided on Rosh Chodesh Shvat when how much and which Chidushei Torah a person will make, or if it just means that that's when it starts to be accessible for the year. It's a little bit unclear, but it's interesting that there is some kind of koach for Torah and personal innovations of the Torah in Shabbat.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that that's like a koach? Like Yantzer has a certain koach. So would you say that that's kind of
interesting? Like, could be. Yeah, you could say that. In other words,
you could take from something that you can spread the.
You can draw from. Yeah, it sounds like that's exactly what he's saying. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like if you're looking to learn a little bit of extra, or to kind of start thinking in a different way of innovative ideas, and like think about on your own about Torah, that Shabbat is a great accessible time to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. So we have a symbol of Torah, which is related to the mazel of the Dili, of Asher and of the Jewish people as a whole. And just as a side note, you know, the Gemara also says, Ein mazel be Yisrael. Wait a minute, what are we talking about? How could the Jewish people have a mazel? I thought, there is no mazel for Yisrael. So B'nai Yisrael answers it, and he says, in truth, there is a mazel to Yisrael, but how that plays out, how our destiny forms itself, is dependent on how we interact with the Torah and how much we keep the Torah. So in effect, our mazel is the Torah. The Torah determines, just like a mazel, the idea of a mazel is like that it's a kind of a force that determines how things are going to go. So the Torah is what determines how Am Yisrael proceeds and how our history proceeds. And so, of course, if there's going to be a mazel for the whole Jewish people, that is what it's going to be. It's going to be the Dali drawing up the water of the Torah. So we have that symbol set, pretty much. But there's another symbol associated with Shevet Asher, actually. And where is the best place to find out things about the Shvatim? It's not the brachas for the Shvatim in Vayechi and at the end of the Torah. So source, we have that in sources 6 through 8. Source 6, what does Yaakov say to Asher at the end of his life? He says, "May Asher shmein alachmo v'hu yitein mazanei melech," that his bread is going to be like fat, or he's going to have like a rich, you know, the food in his, he's going to have rich food, fat bread, and he's going to have the delicacies of the king. And Rashi explains there, source 7, "Machal haba mechelko shel Asher yehei shamin," that the food that grows in his chelak in Eretz Yisrael is going to be like fat, rich food. And what is it specifically going to be? Sehiyu is zeitim merubin b'chelko. There are going to be a lot of olives there. V'hu moshech shemen t'mayan. And because there's so many olives, he's going to be like pouring forth and overflowing with oil, like a stream. V'chein b'racho moshev et taval b'shemen raglo. K'moshe sheminu b'menachot. Tam achad hutzruchu anshe lukia b'shemen. This is a story that he references from the Gemara. But he says it's similar to the bracha of Moshe, has the same idea, and I copied it in the next source, just like Rashi quoted, "U'asher amar, baruch mi banim asher, yihi ratzo yachav, v'tovel v'shemen raglo." First he starts out, he's blessed from all the sons, he's going to be pleasant and liked by his brothers, and he's going to like dip his foot, or his leg, in oil, that he's going to have so much oil that he can like dip his foot in oil. And so we see that oil, and olive oil in particular, is also associated with Shevet Asher, which is associated with Shabbat. And again, one more source for it being associated dafka with Asher is in Bnei Baraba, source 9, where it talks about the different flags that all the Shvatim had, again, referring to the time when they were camping in the Midbar. And it says, Asher Tarshish Vitseva Mapashal Adomel Le'evin Yikara Shemit Kashtot Bo Hanashim. It associates the Medrash, associates the color of the Choshen stones for that Sheva with the color of their flag. And what was drawn on the flag of Asher? Umitsuyar Alav, Ilan Zayat, Al Shem, and the Asher Shmein Alachmo. Just like we explained these two brachas, and the way Rashi explained specifically in Vayechi, that there's some connection between olive trees, so that's what was on his flag. There's a picture of an olive tree. What is the meaning of the symbol of an olive tree or of olive oil? The Gemara in Menachos, that actually Rashi had referenced in source 10, explains. And it quotes Shmuel Bet, Perek Yedalad, where the Avshalom had run away, and Yoav knew that really deep down David wanted him to come back. So Yoav was kind of trying to devise a plan of like how to approach David about this. And what did Yoav do? Vayishlach Yoav Tekoa, vayikach misham isha chachama. Yoav went, he sent to Tekoa to find a wise woman to help him in his plan. Myishna Tekoa, so what's the big deal about Tekoa? Why do we care that the woman was from Tekoa? Amrav Yochanan, mitoch sheregilim b'shemen zayet. chachma mitziyah b'hem, because in this place in Tekoa there's a lot of olive oil, and that is where chachma can be found, in places where there's olive oil. Tan rabbanan zvarm la megimel v'tovet ol b'shemen raglo zechalchol shal asher shamashich shemen kamayan. And again, it references the bracha of Asher, where we have a mention of oil. And so apparently there's a connection between chachma and oil. And if you think about, like, here we're talking about Shvat, but really we're coming out of Teves and, right, and Kislev, and that's something people talk about with Hanukkah, that, well, with the menorah, the oil, chokmah, and they relate it to the Yevanim and Torah and all these things. And so we see kind of the symbol sort of follows through to the next month also, and there's an association between Shvat, Shevet Asher, chokmah, and olive oil. Okay, so we have two different symbols now. We have Torah and we have chokmah. You can see where this is going a little bit with the title, right? What does that have anything to do with each other? And how are they both symbols for the same shevet? If they seem like, are they the same symbol? Is it different? Like, what exactly, how does the ideas relate to each other? So source 11, the B'nai Yisachar, he kind of recaps the points we just made, and there's a point, I think maybe it's a little bit subtle, of how, maybe it's not so subtle, how they relate to each other. He says, Kevan zeh mazal sh'achodesh hazeh, hu mazal d'li, hu mazal shel Yisrael. So since the mazal of this month of Shevet is the mazal of the water bucket, which is also the mazal of all of Yisrael, from Var L'El Bet, like he said before, v'hu evid mishamesh mishubar al hamayim zu Torah, that the symbol of the pail is like a person who's subservient to mayim. What's mayim? That's Torah. He ikar chachma, that's like the main chachma there is. Araita mechachma nefkad, b'reishu v'chachmatai, quotes Chazal to support his point. And he says, Alkein miyuchas ha-chodesh zeh l'shevet asher, asher b'chalko ha-shem en zayit ha-misugal l'chachma. That's why the month, which is really the month of the Dali, also is associated with Asher, who has oil in his shevet, which represents chachma. Because what is chachma and what is Torah? He says, Torah, he ikar ha-chachma. Torah is the ikar chachma that there is. So he's saying the symbols of water and of oil, the pail and the olive trees, really it's the same thing, essentially, because the ultimate chachma that you can get is in Torah. So that's what the symbol of the month is. He's basically saying it's a month of Torah, and that is chachma, because that's the best chachma there is. So it kind of sounds like he's saying they're synonymous with each other.
What is he saying? He says, Mishubad al-mayim. The oil?
So there he was talking about, he didn't get to the oil to the end of it.
Oh.
He's talking about the dli still. A water pail is kiilu, he calls it in the terms of subservient to water, because it's serving the water. It's like picking it up and holding the water. It's a tool to use the water with. So too, we should be tools and vessels and receptacles for the Torah, to drop the Torah. He had elaborated on it more earlier, but that's kind of what he's referencing there. So he sounds like he's saying they're, you know, Torah's ultimate chachma, and that's why the, you know, it matches up very well. It's a nice puzzle. It fits, right? But there's a little bit of a different way you could look at it. The sefer that I mentioned before, Ratz Katzvi, Rabbi Reisman, who wrote it, he kind of says something interesting. He says, that may be the case, but the thing is, if you look at Chazal, oil and water, chachma and Torah, they're not exactly the same thing. He says, Chazal themselves, they say, you know, Eicha Rabba, I didn't copy it, he says, Eicha Rabba says, if someone tells you, Yesh Chachma Bagoyim, you should believe them. Yes, there can be Chachma Bagoyim. Someone tells you, there's Torah Bagoyim, no, don't believe them. Because what's Torah? Torah is something special. It's just the Jewish people have Torah. It's our, you know, Matana from Hashem. And so, Rabbi Reisman says, like, even if Chachma, yes, that's true, there is Chachma in Torah. He says the Gra found the math in Torah. You know, like, you can learn things out of it, but, like, that's a really hard thing to do, to, like, learn out all the subject areas, all the wisdoms of the world only out of Torah. Like, do we really know how to do that so well? Not necessarily. And so he says that the Chazal also paints that those two subject areas as separate things. And so he says, yeah, those ideas are both in Shvat, but maybe they're also separate ideas. And he says, oil is one symbol. Oil, what he looks at the natural properties of these things. He says, oil, it separates from things, right? You try to mix it up with water or with certain other things, and it just rises to the top. It's separate. But water, everything dissolves in water, not everything, but, you know, it's a mixture kind of a liquid. And so they represent two different ideas. He says, oil, we see, is like Torah. It, you know, it's above everything else, and that's important. People need to be separate and above and, you know, involved in loftier things. But there's also a place for the water message of being involved in things. And I just thought it was really interesting the way he phrased it. In source 12, he says he talks about these shtei midot, these two ideas, these two different aspects. Liyot morim me'am, v'lomod midrachei hamon ha'am, to be like above. And here he's also talking about within the Jewish people, to be like above the masses of people, and not to learn from the ways of people who maybe they are not so knowledgeable or not necessarily doing the right thing, to be above that. Ulam yacharim zot yesh lehit arot bahem ba'am liot modev lenasa ulazvin et trachav l'chal kel et hazvarim b'chachma. It's also important to mingle with the nation, to be together with the masses, and to realize what you need, because their human needs in the world, besides their physical human needs, for example, you know, like just like basic things to sustain ourselves, that chokhmah is needed for, in order to get by. And it's interesting because Rabbi Reisen himself actually is a very excellent example of what he's talking about. He himself publishes like a sefer every year, and he gives like two or three shiurim a week. He's very knowledgeable in Torah. But he's also the CEO and the president of a cosmetics company in Los Angeles. And he does very well, Kanara, and he's just beautiful with his money, whatever. And he's actually also mechutin with Rav Goldberg, as an aside. and it's so interesting to hear a person like this. You know, when I read this, I was like, who is this person who's saying that? Like, and I looked into it, and it's very interesting. He realizes that there are needs, like people have human needs. We need to sustain ourselves. Like, there's an idea, people need parnassa somehow. Like, there is a way of thinking that Torah is everything, and like, you can get by with just Torah. But there are also a lot of different other branches of Judaism that recognize that in some shape or form, what shape or form is a different question, which, you know, people disagree about, obviously, but in some shape or form, he sees very well that it's necessary to be involved in both, and it's possible to be involved in both, and to succeed very well in both, as he himself does, Baruch Hashem. And so he kind of brings the one idea that B'nai Yisrael says, and he kind of weeds it out and says that they're really kind of different. And I actually spoke to him on the phone, and he said it's just easier to think of them this way. I said, like, are you trying to disagree with B'nai Yisrael, or you know how he's thinking of this? And it's not necessarily the opposite of what the B'nai Yisrael means, but it's just easier kind of to think of them as two separate categories, because, you know, it's not necessarily easy to combine all the ways of the world in that way. And he points out, he goes on with the sources that we mentioned before, and he says how even within those sources about Shvat in the Torah, it's possible to see the threads of Torah and of Chachma going on. Because, again, back to the first source, it sounds like it's just talking about Torah. What happened in Rosh Chodesh Shvat? Moshe started telling over Devarim, Torah, on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. And it's Mishnah Torah, you know, it's like the quintessential Torah he's told over. But the thing is, Rabbi Reisen points out that there's actually a reference to a more chachmah, broader idea in the same context. Two psukim later, source 13, it says, Ve'evar hayardein be'aret Moav, ho'il Moshe bi'erat ha-Torah hazot le'mor. That, you know, in that context, when he was starting to speak, he explained the Torah. What does that mean, he explained the Torah? Rashi says, source 14, Be'erat ha-Torah b'shivim lashon pir shalahem. But he interpreted and translated it to 70 languages, the Torah. And Rabbi Reisen actually is kind of conservative about how he deals with this. He quotes another source that says that Rashi really is referring to that Moshe was translated it for the Jews who didn't understand Hebrew, because there were so many Jews in the Midbar, and they didn't all necessarily understand Hebrew. So Moshe wanted the Torah to be accessible to all the Jews, even to the Hamon Am, like what Rabbi Reisen said in source 12. And so that's what that means. That's what it refers to. Only within the Jews, like, you know, he's not treading on anything dangerous, really. You know, like, well, of course, Torah should be accessible to all the Jews. Chachma, you have to, is for Parnasa, and the Torah is for the, you know, it's for everyone. We have to relate to all the Am Yisrael, even if they're not so elite in Torah, so knowledgeable. It's kind of within a safe context that he talks about these two ideas, Torah and Chachma. You know, my very humble opinion, it sounds to me like when I hear the term Shivim Lashon, you know, like, to me that rings of the Shivim Amamim and like the world. So you know, I wonder if there's room to say that maybe the message is a little bit broader than that even. And also, you know, he's saying to be, like, what does Chachma mean? Chachma, like, again, Yesh Chachma B'goyim, he himself said it. So, like, maybe there's a necessity to some extent, don't ask me what extent, that's everyone's personal, you know, personal question to their Rav or whomever, but to some extent, maybe it's important, and the message here is also to be involved in spreading important ideas with the whole world. And we see, like in current events, right? Israel sent a mission to Haiti to help. You know, what do we have to do with Haiti? They're from Israel, especially across the world. But they help them also. That's a little different than Chachma. But just to make the point of like being involved in the world in a way that's a positive, constructive, important way. You know, we see that that's something that it should be taken into consideration. And the other thing Rabbi Reisman says is if you look back at source 8, what's another part of the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu gave Shevet Asher? The middle part is Yehi Ratzoi Le'achav, that he should be like pleasant to his brothers. And the way he understands that is that all the brothers felt that Asher was like one of them. Even though the Shvatim were separate, he also like, it's also kind of like a universal sort of imagery and idea of like relating to different kinds of people. Again, that is within the Jewish people, but the point is there's two aspects here. There's a more unique, exclusive Torah kind of idea, and there's a more universal idea as well. And I think it's interesting also because, you know, maybe not everybody can do what Rabbi Reisman does to be so successful in Torah and so successful in Chachma. And there are other people, I feel like even within the YU circle, people don't necessarily talk so much about that ideal of like who are people? Are there people who really, you know, exemplify Torah umada who are like both? Like, what does that mean? Is it really possible to do both? And there are people like Rabbi Tendler is a Rosh Hashiva and he got his PhD in biology and he's able to merge the two and be, you know, to excel in both. And like people know, you know, Rabbi Avram Tversky, he's in psychology and Torah and he brings them together and he's top in both fields and, you know, unbelievable. I think it's also important to think about what is the symbol of this Torah Chachma. Even if you say, you know, that they're not one and the same, like B'nai Sefer exactly, even if you say they're different and it's possible to excel in them both, not every Shevet was Asher either. Asher maybe symbolizes this in a certain sense, but like there was a Yisachar, Yisachar was just Torah, you know, there was a Zvulun. I'm sure Zvulun lived by the Torah values, but he wasn't sitting and learning all the time either. He had went to work. So in other words, even while we're saying Torah Mada, Torah Chachma, like be involved in everything, whatever, that also may not be for everyone. And we see within the structure of the Shvatim that there's also a place for people who are more one or more the other. Great. There's a little glitch that I kind of heard when I was looking at Rabbi Reisman, what he said, and explaining this. Because first, maybe you can think of it. I don't know. What's inconsistent in what he said and how he was relating to B'nai Yisachar?
No.
That's okay too, if not. he's
saying Chachma is for... Oh, he switched it.
Mm-hmm.
He switched it because he's saying that the oil is the Torah and the water is the Chachma.
What's going on? Hold on a second. I thought you were quoting the B'nai Yisachar. How come now you're saying that oil is, it's true. Everything's true, right? The symbols of oil and water are true. We just saw that in the sources. And the natural properties, you know, often natural properties are definitely symbols for things and there's ruchnias symbolized by the physical world and the properties of oil and water. So like, what's going on here? I thought oil is Chachma and water is Torah. You're telling me oil rises, which is true, like Torah, and water is intermingled like Chachma. So what is it? So I thought it just made me think of something interesting. Maybe there's also a message about how Torah and Chachma can relate to each other from that little seeming inconsistency. Rabbi Reisman doesn't say this, but I was just thinking about it, and it seems to me that maybe, not that they're interchangeable exactly, but each one can be found in the other. In other words, you know, Torah can be found in Chachma, and Chachma can be found in Torah. Maybe that's a lesson we can learn from the fact that each symbol can represent either one. And what does that mean? Well, like Rabbi Reisman had mentioned to me on the phone, of course, you know, you could, Torah, of course, Chachma is in Torah, and not just Halacha kind of Chachma, but like world kind of Chachma. Like, if you're the Gra and you want to learn mathematics out of the Torah, you could. And if, you know, And there's all sorts of things in the Torah, you know, afochba de kulaba. And if you want to look at chachma with a Torah perspective, and you want to learn Torah lessons from things you see in the world, that's possible also. And that's also something that's especially used by like certain Kirov organizations. Like I know on like the Aish and Chabad websites, they have little like clips where someone's saying something they saw on Maisa that happened, or like the nature of something in the world, and they learn like a Torah lesson out of it. And it's definitely possible also to look at the world and see messages, Torah messages from it, and to grow in ruchnius just from other things as well, not only from like looking at a sefer. That's also especially like women, you know, a lot of times people talk about that because many times women are involved in things that are not just sfarim. And that's necessary to look at chachma, and chachma in the broader sense, not necessarily only intellectual chachma, but like look at what's out there, that what people are involved in the world, and learn again in a Torah kind of way from it. And for human beings also, you know, I mentioned the example of how certain organizations take chachma and they learn Torah from it. It's a little harder, I think, to you know, just like the Gra, we can't all be the Gra, to take Torah and to learn chachma out of it. Like, what does that really mean? And I think that nowadays, probably most or many people, I don't know, I'm just talking for myself, maybe like that we don't necessarily know how to do that properly. And often, especially like in the YU world, where people are open to learning chachma sources independently, if it's appropriate, etc. That maybe sometimes the way to go about learning chachma from Torah is if we learn a little bit of chachma first, obviously within the Torah framework, but like once you learn the science, you know, the, I don't mean the creation of the world, evolution, but I mean like, you know, the scientific method of how they come to medical proofs of things and learn how to create medicines and those kinds of things, then you can go back to the Torah and look to see what jumps out at you, or what is there in the Torah that maybe we didn't notice before. And just like I was thinking an example of this, my father actually sort of does work like this in the social sciences, where he studied in a secular institution. He studied counseling and pastoral care, they call it, you know, like healing and those kinds of things. And now he currently works for an organization in Chicago, the Jewish Healing Network, where he brings that, and he looks at Torah, Chazal sources, especially Bikrachom and Avelos and things like that, and he gleans the chachma from it and points out to people. He does, you know, makes curriculum from it and gives sessions to alcoholics about messages of how to deal with these things in a very like chachma world kind of way. He speaks to people where I'm from, but he uses the Torah to point out those things. And so he kind of gleans the chachma out of the Torah. Not that it always needs gleaning, but sometimes it does because we don't notice it otherwise. And that it's possible really to kind of use both, you know, to go both ways in a way. And whatever field the person is in, maybe they could look at that subject area and kind of think about, you know, what resonates from Torah in their mind that could help you grow as a Jew and could help you grow in the field. And Rabbi Eisen said, like, you know, a lawyer can become a better lawyer from Torah, and whatever a person is involved in, like, it should definitely be related. That's the Torah Chachma. Going off a little bit, related idea about Shvat, in Source 15, this is from the Shemi Shmuel. Actually, his yard site was a week ago, last Sunday. And he says, there are a few different pieces here from him. It's very interesting what he has to say. He says, "L'fi seder hadgalim miyuchas hachodesh hazeh la'asher shnitbarech b'shemen sheyesh bo gam kim inyan hitchapchut sh'arei shemen machkim az shezayet mashkeach u'mishum t'ayidei katisha nishaneh v'tatech mira l'tov v'chein hu b'azim ayidei bitu shekatisha." So he says that there's another message from the fact that the Degalim, you know, order associates Asher to Shvat, and what message, and Asher has to do with Shemen Zayit, right? And what do we see? A message that we see from olive oil is this reversal idea, his hapchut. And he says, this particular part, I wasn't sure what his reference was, I didn't see it anywhere. He says, Shemen is Machkim, you know, that's sort of what we saw, that olive oil relates to Chachma. But he also says that the olive itself kind of causes forgetfulness. I don't know exactly what he's referring to, but obviously it's an opposite idea. Mm-hmm. And we see in the process of making oil, olive oil also, that it starts out olives, you know, regular olives are bitter, just raw olives from the tree without being cured or pickled or whatever it is. It's pretty bitter. And then only once it's processed You know, I work in a preschool, and we have like an olive press come, again, with Hanukkah connection, where we put all the olives in a bag in this big contraption and stuck blocks on top, and all the kids crank the handle around, and it's smushed, and it's smushed, and it's smushed, and, and the liquid comes out. And then even after it's all smushed, the liquid still isn't oil. It either has to sit out, or they use a centrifuge now to like separate it. It has to be spun around and all these crazy things done to it. Like, it's a hard thing to turn something negative to something positive. But that message is inherent in the month of Shvat as relates to Asher and olive oil. And he says the same thing with people. People, sometimes we have to go through the hardships in order to get the good out of it. And I thought it was interesting that it is about Shvat, because that kind of is similar to what we were saying about Torah and Chochmah. Because sometimes it takes some smushing and crushing, you know, to get the Torah out of Chochmah, to like look at, especially in that direction, probably in both directions, but especially it's easy to understand how there's, you know, secular or just general Chochmah around us, and it's not so natural or easy to see the Chochmah in that, but it's there, and there's potential to get it out, and sometimes it just takes some effort and some work to get it out. And it's interesting, Rabbi Lam has a book called Torah Umada, where he kind of lays out a bunch of different models of like what possible ways you could look at the interactions or lack thereof between Torah and the worldly knowledge. And he quotes Rav Kook as kind of having like a mystical model, where Rav Kook says there's no such thing as secular, as profane. It's just material that's waiting to be turned into Kedusha, into Torah, into holiness. And the question is, how is that going to happen? And so, like, I kind of looked at the source and was thinking that maybe that's really, that's the avoda of this world. And there's this also Chassidus, you know, that's the tradition Rav Kook was coming out of. Chassidus has this idea of, like, the nitzotzos in the world, that there are sparks of holiness hidden and, like, scattered throughout the whole world and everything. And our job here is really to redeem them and to elevate the Kedusha out of things. And that sometimes could be a hard process. But it's, you know, it's possible to do that. And it's interesting because, again, in the same like Hasidic tradition, if you ever looked at a Tu B'Shvat Seder, talking about Shvat and Tu B'Shvat, what do they do at Tu B'Shvat Seders? So part of it is where in sequence they eat different kinds of fruits. First they eat foods that have inedible shells, and it's like the outside is hard, and like in Hasidic Kabbalah language, like klipa is the language that's used to describe, you know, like the negative forces, that it's like the peel that we don't want. We take it off and we discard it. So that stage of eating things at the Tu B'Shvat Seder with shells that you can't eat, that's parallel to what they call the world of Asiya, which is like the world that's surrounded by materialism. Like, you just can't crack into it easily. You have to really just remove the materialism and get out from that shell in order to access the fruit inside. But then what happens? The next step up, the next stage in the Tu B'Shvat Seder, is they eat foods where there's no shell on the outside. It's easier to access the good, the fruit, but there's a pit on the inside. And that, they say, is parallel to the, again, I don't really understand, you know, it's hard to understand really what this means and relates to, but there's another idea of the world of Yetzirah, which is like a higher level. And that represents things where there's a tumah that's penetrated the Kedusha, so there's still like negative force in there, but it's a seed, so it has potential to grow into something better. So it's like the olive that can grow into, you know, that can grow into a fruit. It's more like the olive pit that can grow into an olive tree. It's one level up, where you're starting to use the bad for good a little bit. And then finally they eat foods that are totally edible, like a blueberry or like a strawberry or whatever, where like even the seeds you could eat, or there's no seeds that you can see very clearly, and you can just eat the whole thing. And that symbolizes a higher level. It's called Bria, the world of Bria, where it transforms the negative into positive. And that's the idea of like redeeming these nitzotzos, of like, you know, taking the olives and making into olive oil, of just going through that heart of Voda and making it into something positive and elevating it. It's interesting because Hasidus also talks about this idea that the 12 months of the year are divided up so that either each month or a part of a month is Kilu, like under the power of Yaakov or Esav, it's called. Like, for instance, like Tammuz is a negative energy of a month, is under the power of Esav. So Zipra Chassidish starts to say that Shvat is divided in half. The first part of Shvat is under the power of Esav, and the second half of Shvat is under the power of Yaakov. What does that mean? So it's sort of this idea of his haplus, of like transformation. It shows us, like, you start out with a negative koach, and you even see it reflected in the parshiot of this month. Like, we start out in the gullus of Mitzrayim, you know, and then what happens? This year worked out perfectly. What happens? In the middle, we're redeemed. Parshiot B'Shalach this year, Mamish, is the same day as Tu Bishvat. And that's when, all of a sudden, things start turning around, and it's total reversal of seeing the positive and getting free of the negative shackles, and just, like, things change. And it teaches us this message of change and how it's possible to grow out of the negative and change it to good. And Shem Yishmael continues with this idea in the next couple of sources, 16. He says, Yesh Lamar, Shezeh Ha'inyan Nimsa Heim Ba'olam Heim B'Nefesh. The same, there's a parallel here between what happens in the world and what happens within a human being, and the spiritual ideas that we said before. Ba'olam, Ketzad, Mazal Dli. Dihine, Blize Hachana, Lidlot Mai, Mibor Amok, Vuhu Lashon Hagbahak, Moshe Katuv, Armimcha Hashem Kidli Tani, Shepirusho, Hagbata, Oti. וכן בלשון המשנה, הדלה עליה הגפן וכן הרבות, מובן שזה רק הכנה לעשות דבר. That what's going on in the world, we see in the world this idea of transformation in a particular type of way through the symbol of the dli. Because what happens with the pail, right? We were talking about wells before. You lower the pail, the bucket, into the well, all the way down, deep into this like pit. And then you lift it up, and that's when the good comes out. That's when the water can be drawn and spread to other people to drink. And so there's an element, like it's called Yerida Latzor Haliyah, that sometimes we go through a hard time, we go through, like the gullus, and we don't even understand why we need the gullus necessarily. There's this pit, and sometimes it seems like it's just this yuck, you know, you need to throw it out, this terrible pit, but there's a reason to it. And then you lift up the dli, and that's when you can rise up above it. And it's just important to remember, he says, that it's hachana lasot davar, that the lowering of the glee is really for the sake of coming up again. We can't forget that. That's the point. And he continues a little later, v'chein yesh lefareish shvat basana, shebechodesh hazeh matzchil teva ha'olam lefroach v'aperot chontin me'ata v'uit chadshut hachiyot achar hashena shel yemot hachoref. He says there's a parallel in the physical world also, in nature, where what's happening in Shvat, it's the very, very, very beginning of the start of spring, that we're just coming out of like the sleepy days of winter, and now, especially in Israel, and even less visibly in Chutz La'aretz, we're like, now there's like this little beginning of buds or flowering, and a little bit of chiyus developing in the world out of this sleepy winter. Yesh behem nami, shneya inyanim ha'ela ha'chana, v'atachlik, ki kamo bagashmiyo yesh beruchmiyot. מתחילה להתנוצץ חיות חדשה בחודש זה הוא ראש השנה ליוונות ואדם את השדה בחודש אחריו דל פרשיות ופורים ואחר כך ניסן ופסח וספיר ושבות וימים מטלים והוכן. And he says this parallel idea is in Ruchnius and Gashmius, where we see in the physical world that the nature around us, it seems dead in the winter, and it's just starting to bud and to come to life again. So that's what's happening in Shvat. Is Shvat, what happens in Shvat? Nothing happens in Shvat. Like, what? You know, it's all weekdays. It seems like the same as usual. But somewhere deep under the surface, there's this koach for a chiddush Torah. There's this, like, you know, deep hidden potential there. And there's the beginning. What happens in Shvat? Someone just said to me, actually, over Shabbat, like, oh, it's Rosh Chodesh Shvat. I guess the year is over, basically, then, because now you start thinking about Purim, and then it's Pesach, and then it's Shavuot, and that's it. The year's over. Like, that's the ball is rolling now. Like, you know, there was the hibernation of winter, and like somewhere under there, the seed is just starting to open up. And I thought it was interesting also that what happens when a seed starts growing into a plant? Before it can really grow, first it has to break apart. The seed has to open, and there has to be, then the roots start coming out, and the shoot comes up, and then it can be a plant. But it decomposes first. And so, like, it relates to all these different ideas. In Ruchnius, sometimes we feel like we're so down, there's a Yerida, like, where's this going? It's so hard, whatever, we don't understand. But really, it's part of the growth process, you know, growing pains, whatever you want to call it. And even with Torah and Chachma, you see it, because if a person's interested in going through that avodah of, like, transforming the Chachma into Torah and, like, using Torah and applying it to this world, sometimes it could be dangerous. And like, it's nice to talk about Torah Mada, it's so beautiful, but a person has to be careful, and sometimes it starts with like a little bit of exposure to things that are not so good, and that's why people are against it. You know, like the seed breaks apart. So a person really has to keep their eye on the ball And remember that they can't just be having Yerida. Like, they can't just be getting exposed. Oh, don't worry, it's Torah Mazel, like, it's okay. It's for, you know, but to get so involved in it that they're losing the point. The mission of the Jewish people, we have to have the Torah. Like, that's what we're here for, you know? And so even if there is an element of Yerida involved, obviously each individual situation has to be dealt with on that level, but we see, like, in Ruchnius, in Gashmius, in Teva, in a human being, like, this idea is consistent that there's somewhat of a silence or of a breakdown even, but it ultimately leads to growth. And so we see that in the Shem Yishmu about this chiyus, and just to finish his idea in 18, he says, Achanat kora shvat haynu hirchad shurachiyo yesh la taklit nechvada ha'ba'a l'kratinu l'shalom, v'yishan elba v'einenu nimshach achar hirchad shurachiyo l'vad. Person's not just looking for this renewal, the, like, excitement and the thrill of the, you know, of this chiyus that's growing, el l'tachlit nechvada, it has to be for a purpose. If you don't keep your eye on the ball, then it might just be harmful and not helpful. And that is the Shem Yishmu. And Rav Wolfson, who is Rav Moshe Wolfson, is this rabbi in Borough Park of Shul Emunas Yisrael. He writes the Sefer. He puts out called Emunas Yitecha, and he relates to some of the similar ideas in an interesting way. Source 19, he says, V'chodesh Shvat, Chodesh shall besur shall geula, going along with, like, the Shem Yishmu talking about Purim and Pesach and everything, you know, Shvat is the harbinger of geula. It calls out the news of geula. Kedita b'vnei Yisachar. Again, he quotes a different idea from the B'nai Yisachar. Shachodesh hazeh hu b'chinat batko hamachriz m'vaser al yitzirat havlad shall geula. There's also an idea that in Shvat there's, like, a batko that comes down and announces the birth of the geula. Ayin Sham, you can go look it up there. V'hine serach bat Asher. He kidma levaser liyakov sheod Yosef chai terem sheod yuhu al zehashvatim bebirur. So he connects it. He says Sarah about Asher, right? The daughter of Asher. She told the news to Yaakov that Yosef was still alive before the shvatim told him clearly. Yeah, skipping to the end of the brackets. The Yaakov here gish baopen shel hargasha sheze emet. Lachin zaka Sarah bat Asher shehi nekeva b'china hargasha distra b'surah zu. He says that an interesting kind of side point. That she didn't say it straight out. There's this, you know, Masora that she kind of played it like a song for him and sort of told him subtly and slowly, and he felt that it was true. It was through Hargasha, which is a special koach of women, of Nekeva, and that's how she told him the news. Kain he'ira chad min ha'chaveir m'makshivim shesarachim m'shevet asher ha'mechuvan l'shevet shvat, that someone pointed out, well, yeah, that's very consistent and makes a lot of sense, because Sarach bar Asher was from Shevet Asher, which is parallel to Shvat and the harbinger of Gula, like, that's very appropriate, that she's the one who told the news. He kidma lahodiel Yaakov, shehu ha'gadol migdoli hador, asher gashato, who aleph b'shvat, kedivrei, I'm not sure that's the Baal Shem, he says, it sounds kind of here like maybe he's saying that a news almost came on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, that, like, Yaakov had that feeling from what she said, that it was true on aleph b'shvat. There's some connection here between Shvat and this happening, and he says, Lachain, Sarah, her name, Rashi Tevot, Rosh Chodesh Shvat. If you turn the letters around, Sarah can be acronym for Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Vihihi Bechinat Shvat HaMevasera, and that is the aspect of Shvat, that's kind of that harbinger and announcer of Geula, of positive things to come. On the Yesh Leremez, there's another remez here, Shvat, Rashi Tevot, Shmuot Besorot Tovot. Hearing good news. There's a really positive energy to Shvat here, even though it's the preliminary and it's the beginning and it's just calling it out and announcing it. There's really a positive potential and energy in Shvat. And Rav Wolfson pointed out, actually on Shabbos, we were there in Israel for Shabbos, and he said then that when the Mishnah says the machlokes of when the Rosh Hashanah Leilah note is, right? Is it Aleph or is it Tevav? So the Lashon is that the opinion of Aleph B'Shvat is Kedivrei Beit Shammai. And then afterwards it says, and Beit Hillel Omrim is Tevav B'Shvat. So his understanding of Kedivrei Beit Shammai is that the Lashon indicates, something the Lashon indicates that really the ideal is more like Beit Shammai, even though we follow Beit Hillel, but like this idea of having, of the Rosh Hashanah Leilah note, which is kind of a climax of, you know, like that's when we said that's when the month transforms over to the positive power of Yaakov, that's halfway through the month. Really, he said, we should really be looking, or we could really be looking towards the Geula and searching for this positive, you know, reversal of koach, we can really start that earlier. You know, the Jewish people have the power to bring the Geula early. Like, start looking at Aleph B'Shvat, even though it's not, you know, that's not really the halacha, whatever. He said in a conceptual kind of way, we can preempt it, and we can search for the Geula already from the beginning of Shvat. Like, that's always something, it's never too early to look for the good news and to try to transform to the positive and to uplifting. So there's a really interesting kind of different take on it. And that's Rav Wolfson. And just a final idea that I wanted to say is based on something Rav Wolfson says elsewhere. He takes it in a different direction, so I didn't copy it, but he says, in addition to looking at the parallel of the months, Nishvatim, as based on the order of how they camped in Midbar, there's another place where we see the Shvatim symbolized by something, and that's the Choshen, where the Choshen, each stone in the Choshen was symbolic of a Shevet, and that goes in a different order than the order of how they camped. That mostly goes in the order of how they were born, in the order of the wives of Yaakov. And he says, if you look at that order, you know, it's still going that Shvat is the 11th month before Nisan, starting from Nisan, but what's the 11th stone in the Choshen? Who does it represent? Yosef. Yosef is the 11th stone in the Choshen, and there's a connection between Yosef and Shevet Shvat as well. And he goes in a different direction again, but I found a source in source 20 where it sounds like Yosef actually also could be related to these ideas. Yes.
You just, in this thing that you just said, Sarah was announcing that Yosef was...
Ah, good one. Yeah. So that's an interesting connection. Sarah, mm-hmm. Right. Interesting. Another place where there was a connection. Interesting. So you could see like what's going on with Yosef. So there's already a connection here, and in this there's a book called The Quest for Authenticity. It's about Rav Simcha Bonim of Tshitla, by this person Michael Rosen. And first he quoted Rav Simcha Bonim earlier, and he says the point is, however, that Rav Bonim is describing a religious model, a man of God who is attuned to this world from which he learns and with which he is engaged. And the following is another tradition in the name of Rav Bonim talking about Yosef. He says, the Egyptians knew well about men in whom the Spirit of God moved, like Hanoch, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and similar people. But these were pure people who separated themselves from the world to engage in the service of God, and they had no dealings with people in business or in work, whereas the righteous Yosef, who was in charge of Potiphar's household and ruled over everything he had, whether at home or in the field, and knew various languages, yet in spite of all this had the Spirit of God with him, such a thing they had never heard of or seen before. That Yosef sort of represents that, what we were saying earlier about Chachma and Torah, that he is a model of, again, he's not the only model there is, but he is a model also of this idea of Torah and Chachma, and he himself, he went through his own galus. We're talking about, you know, Shvat and the Yeridah, the Chaliyah, and, you know, Galus Mitzrayim and Geula, and everything that's happening at the same time and transforming. That was Yosef's life, really, the beginning of his life anyway. He, you know, down to Mitzrayim, down in jail, and then he ends up being Mishnah Lamelech, and that is ultimately, it was Yiridah Torah Chaliyah. It all was what was leading up to bringing, you know, his family to Mitzrayim in the famine, which, interestingly enough, was a larger Yiridah Torah Chaliyah, because that was the start of Galus Mitzrayim, which was the start of Geula, and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it goes on and on. So really, I think from a number of different perspectives, the month just talks about, you know, how there is a negative aspect and there's or a neutral or a secular aspect in the month, and that can really be transformed or taken along with, or with the goal of elevating things and Torah and bringing, you know, Chidushi Torah and Geula and Mir Hashem. Like, we should be able to use also this month that we have in front of us to, you know, to uplift ourselves in the world, and we should just, it should lead to the ultimate Geula. Mir Hashem, Mir Avim Aminu.